My name is Marcy Okada. I work for the National Park Service, Yukon Charley Rivers National Preserve, and I'm here today with Elizabeth Sager at her home, but we are interviewing in her yard. And today is August 3rd, 2021, and we'll go ahead and get started. So I'm just gonna start off with questions, Elizabeth, on your personal background. We'll just start off with where you were born and raised.
Okay. I was born and raised in Munich, Germany, which is in Bavaria.
Okay.
Which is a beautiful place, especially if you don't have to live there and can just visit. Just too many people. Anyway, and I came to Alaska. Does this answer the first question?
Yes. And mm-hmm. So who were your parents and where were you, how were you educated? And then what brought you to Alaska?
Okay. My parents, my mother was a refugee in the Second World War from Ukraine. Okay. And she and her sister basically managed to cross various front lines heading for Germany during the war, because their father, my grandfather, was arrested and put in the gulag.
Okay.
And we didn't see him till I was, I believe, 14.
Hmm.
Yeah, but he did survive. And when he came back, he lived probably less than half a year longer. He was.
Okay.
I looked at him like a dead man walking, basically.
Yeah.
But he did manage to come back. So, and my father comes from Hungary.
Okay.
And both my mom and my father are from German descent. And their people, my father's people, went to Hungary over 200 years ago. And my mom's people even left earlier. It was probably 1600s or 1400s, whatever. They were there for a long time.
Okay.
But during the war, the Germans went into Hungary, and my dad was actually a child prodigy, starting to become an architect, and the university there tried to keep him very desperately.
Mm-hmm.
But then they took him into the army.
Mm-hmm.
But he was not even 18. He was just 17 when the war ended.
Mm-hmm.
That was the very last, where there was no more people left to fight. And they even took basically kids. You know?
Okay.
So, and they both ended up in Germany.
Okay.
So without the war, my parents never would have met, ever.
Okay.
Which is, I think, true for many people at any type of war.
Mm-hmm.
Where there have to be refugees.
Okay.
It's happening right now.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's the background. I was educated in the regular school and then classical humanistic gymnasium. Gymnasium is like a high school. At that time it was all girls gymnasium. Now they're co-ed. And I was not a bad student. I was not a very compliant student, and I had my troubles. I ended up having to leave the school because they thought I would probably fit better somewhere else. It was a school which was, there was lots of alumni. It used to be a private school.
Okay.
For the better ones. It was not only lately it had become a public school.
Okay.
Probably because of the funding, I would imagine. And the reason I'm here, because I don't fit very well. Anyway, so I went to a different type of gymnasium where there more emphasis on science, and I finished that, and then I studied social pedagogic, which is working with children.
Okay.
Or to young adults or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw and read about Alaska. Actually, the first time I heard about Alaska was through my dad, who read a lot to us, since my mom could not. She was nearly blind and ended up being blind. It came from starvation and TB. Mm-hmm. And so he read us always. He was the one reading to us. And I remember being little, meaning before school age. And he would read about the explorer in the north and about Eskimos, quote unquote. And I always liked it. And he liked it too, I imagine. And then I once saw a documentary and it looked like, huh, there's not many roads here and everybody gets around with a plane, which is not true, obviously. But I liked it. So I got my ex-husband was actually an American citizen, and he went up to the States through Canada, through Alaska, and, you know, he kept talking about it, wanting to go back there. So we decided we both go back here. And that's why it's Alaska, since he was a U.S. citizen. Mm-hmm. I like Canada just as well, the North, yeah. And so we came here.
You met your ex-husband outside?
No, in Munich. He got raised in Munich since he was like 5 years old, because his mother married a GI, went to the States, got divorced, and came back to Munich.
Okay.
Yeah, so... He's American, but he grew up in Munich.
So you were married in Munich?
Yeah.
And then you traveled?
Then you have to do the paperwork, the immigration. Mm-hmm. And then I came here in... The first time I came here in 74, we went back, got married. And in 75, I got all my paperwork done. And I'm a permanent alien resident since then.
Okay. So you came to Alaska in 1974?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you've been here since?
With the break of going back to get married.
Okay.
That took like that summer, almost 3 months. Yeah. Okay. But otherwise, yeah. Okay. And I did go back to Munich, especially the last years, every year in starting maybe 2005. Before that, it was every 2 or 3 years. It's expensive. But when my mom got old, I would get every year. Okay. But she died in 2015. Okay. And I've been there in 16 to help wrap things up. I've been there in 2019 and not since then because of the epidemic. Okay. I have a brother in Munich.
Okay.
And lots of other relatives.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So that explains... your early years, and that explains how you came to Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
You had shared that you also heard stories growing up.
Yeah.
So it was in your mind.
Yeah.
And so when you first got here...
When we first got here, you know, you always meet people. We met some other young people. Well, we knew somebody in Anchorage. We had the address from somebody having a special restaurant at the Stuck Again Heights out on the hillside of Anchorage there. And that is not, you know, you're young, these are not young people and totally different, you know. So we did meet somebody, another German, for example, and he had made friends with another ex-Vietnam veteran. And they had a little, that guy had a little tiny cabin on the Mendeltner Creek, which is just in front of Glen Ellen. If you go from Anchorage to Glen Ellen, you go, I don't know, 20, 30 miles or something in front of Glen Ellen, maybe less. Okay. You go across a little creek, it's called Mendeltner Creek, and he had a cabin there.
Okay.
So we went out there with him, but it turns out, you know, you go there and you talk around, turns out it was native land. But there was two native people there. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is we walked around there and we came to a spot in a bend of the river where there was those overgrown mossy humps. It looked like waves.
Hmm.
And we looked at it and says, this is not natural. Somebody did that.
Oh.
And then we realized there's three native people still living there, the second chiefs. It was a brother and sister and her husband. They were old. And we went and talked to them about it, and they said, that's the village. That whole village died with the sickness which was brought in when the road was made. There was a village there.
Okay.
Yeah. And the second chiefs, the brother and sister and that other guy, were one of the few ones left over. Yeah. They had kids, they were an Anchorage or stuff, so there's more from them, but what a thing, you know, very strange. And I think this happened in so many places here, that utter devastations, and we know now about epidemics and how it goes, you know.
Yes.
Totally helpless. There was, I can't even picture it. So, but yeah, there was the site, and it still is there, where no markings or anything, but there it is, yeah.
So you didn't stay with that gentleman?
Oh, we did. So we did talk to second chiefs, and they said it's okay if we build a cabin, because we wanted to build a cabin, you know. Okay. You're German, you come to Alaska, you need to build a log cabin, yeah, right?
Yes.
Anyway, and they said it's okay because she and the one brother would still go trapping a little bit in wintertime, so they wouldn't mind if there's a little cabin, you know, just one small cabin, whatever, 12 by 14 or something like that.
Okay.
And so we did that.
Okay.
So they were very nice, you know.
Okay.
And
how long did you live out there?
Just one winter. We just wanted to try it out. That was in 73, 74.
Okay.
So we did that, and we picked a good spot away from the creek quite a ways, and it had gravel on it.
Okay.
And coming from Munich, you like nice, good, well-drained, gravelly place. But stupid as we are, well, it's obvious why there's gravel there.
Flooding.
It's the creek.
Yeah.
We built it there. So in springtime, we had to make a moat around it and a little bridge over it. And it's so sad because we made it for them. And I think if it's still standing, I would be surprised, because at any time of high water, the creek will run there. Okay, what a stupid thing. Anyway, it was a nice little cabin, and we learned. We had no idea. Overflow, who ever heard of overflow? What's that, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, totally. You know how it is when you come from a city, and even so you're outdoors, so you have not a clue. You know, and so you learn step by step that, yeah, this is a different place, and things do things differently. We also learned that when you walk through the woods, we made the Joe, one of the, that older brother of the second chiefs, he would walk through the woods with a regular shovel, you know, over his shoulder. And we asked him, it's winter, why do you take this shovel? It's not a snow shovel, it's a regular shovel.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at us and said, sometimes moose meets man.
Oh.
And, you know, moose, we thought, oh, moose eats twigs. Why would it be dangerous? Well, they are, you know, especially in winter. They're ornery, okay?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So that was, I never forget that. I learned the lesson that moose, yeah, they eat leaves, but they're not necessarily nice at all. Yeah. And things like that. You just learn things. And if you're willing to learn things, you can pick it up, no matter how ignorant you are in the beginning.
Yeah.
But you must be willing. Yeah.
So what brought you folks to this part?
Well, the next winter, when after we got married, we came back, we met some other people. We traveled before we went back to Munich that year. We traveled a little bit down to the Kenai Peninsula. We met, you know, young people, meet other young people. We met some brothers. And then when we came back after the marriage, we went to the Kenai Peninsula to, God, you see, there comes my lack of memory. Tell me the place.
There's
Homer.
Okay.
Yeah. We went to Homer, and first they wanted to trap some foxes on some island, and I said, well, how weird is that? That it never worked out, you know. And then they wanted to work on the oil rig, because they at that time pulled one of the rigs into the Homer Harbor, behind the Homer Spit. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of muddy there, and they had trouble raising it again because it kind of got stuck in the mud. It was kind of difficult, and they hired people, but they never hired my ex-husband and his friend. And so they were basically hanging around doing a little bit of wood cutting. So I got to be a waitress, which was also funny since I still have an accent, and I had even worse of an accent then, and certain things I didn't know. And so I worked in that one restaurant. I think the people were Korean. And they talked funny, and I talked funny, I thought. So it's okay. It worked out. Anyway, and I did not like it here, neither did my ex-husband. That was the year when St. Augustine erupted.
Okay.
And so the snow turned all gray, the people turned all weird. Everybody loaded up their cars and springing away in the middle of ordering food because they were so nervous it would spit out ashes and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And so it turned into this gray slush with all the ash falling and whatnot. And then it would melt away. And neither one of us, we like a winter to be winter. We don't want it to melt away in the middle. And there was a lot of people on the Kenai even then. So that was not so to our liking. So we looked at the map and said, we have to go north. We either go up the Taylor, or at that point you could go either to Eagle or Circle.
Okay.
And we picked Eagle.
Okay.
It looked better. Yukon, Circle, Yukon. Nah, we picked Eagle. It looked better. A straight shot, you know. And so we came up here. And we were driving a used Scout. It barely made it here. We basically parked it with Dennis at that time. Our Dennis here at his used non-working car lot. And that was it. So, yeah,
so you arrived, and then where did you live?
Well, we camped out here by the creek when you go down to the park service heading to the creek.
Okay.
For a couple months, Mike got a little job. At that time, there was village firefighting crews, and he got on that one for a bit, you know, for money. And then we went down river.
Okay.
To Trout Creek.
That's, okay.
We had to ask around. There was a number of quote-unquote hippies living along the river, and you had to find an empty bend in the river where they wouldn't mind if you sneak in there. Naturally, not legally, because it was squatting.
Okay. No. And this is still in the 70s?
That is in 75. No, 76.
Okay.
Because 75... And then we went down there and built the cabin.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the cabin building experience. Like, how did you folks get started with that? I mean, you had mentioned you're basically newcomers. So.
We read a lot of books, and my ex-husband has a knack for building.
Okay.
Sonia, my oldest daughter, inherited that too. She's really good at it.
Okay.
I grew up, my dad is a builder.
Okay.
Or was a builder. We were willing to work and use tools, you know, and you got a brain, you can study, and you know, there's books to be read, and you see, you talk to people, you look what they are doing.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of gathering information, especially what others are doing around you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think, oh, that looks okay, that might work, or you say, that doesn't look so great, then you do it whatever your way, and you learn as you go, you know.
So how did you pick the site on Trout Creek?
We picked the site. It had to be not in the open because we were squatting.
Okay.
So there were big trees. There's a creek. That was, nobody else was there. There was people down at the Nation. There was people up at Totonac, the Kirk. So that was an okay place to be.
And you started filling trees in the area?
Yeah, you would pick the trees. Yeah.
Okay. How long did that process take?
Well, we built it that summer. You have to have a cabin in the winter.
Okay.
I mean, there's a time limit to it.
Yes.
Chinked it with moss. We had a sod roof.
Okay.
you know, somewhere there's old pictures. It was a nice little cabin at the time.
Okay.
Yeah, it was. You salvage things coming down the river in the spring, next spring. We got a one, the main window was huge. Mm-hmm. Our door was little, and the window was like three times as big as the door. The door you had to kind of step in, that was Mike's idea and design. And which is great. The window was one of those nice, you know, divided into panes. Mm-hmm. And it came down one spring, you know, in the river, and we put the fixed the glasses again and put it in. Okay. I think we fixed the glasses, or maybe it was one we salvaged from an old place. I don't know. You see, okay. There's my memory.
Okay.
But anyway, it was huge.
When you said it came down in the spring,
things would come down after breakup with the high water.
You found.
Yeah. Do you go to the places where the wood piles up? You know, and you can find all kinds of things.
Okay.
Mostly they come from Canada. Sometimes from Eagle, but usually they come from Canada.
Okay.
Like pink plastic flamingos, for example.
Okay.
We found one, and Sonia, she was little, she fell in love with it. That's when you go up to Sonia's driveway. I gave her two little ones because of that. She loved that flamingo. Because when the way Sonia grew up, she had very little toys which were plastic.
Okay.
You know, we made things, etc. Mm-hmm. So she was just totally in love with plastic and strong colors, and there was this pink flamingo, you know, those regular big ones on a stick. And she called it Wutaki and schlepped it around forever.
Hmm.
The biggest treasure coming down river.
Okay, so let's go back to that. So you built the cabin in the summer,
mm-hmm.
but you were finding things, you know, during spring breakup. And
well, yeah, it was overtime.
And you were adding on to the cabin. And then Sonia. So Sonia was born first.
And yes.
What year was that?
We literally added on to the cabin in the front, which in the end didn't work out. It was not a good way to do it. But Sonia grew when she was little. We had the main cabin, the old cabin, and the front, the addition where the kitchen was in there. And when Iris was born, that's when we finished the new cabin across the creek.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which is now Trout Creek. The old one is still there, but it's, you know, numerous trees are growing and it's kind of going away
to
nature.
So there's two cabins built.
There is two cabins
by you and Mike.
And, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what were some of the positive and positive experiences from building those?
Well, that you can make your home. Mm-hmm. You have it all there. You need a little bit hardware, and you need some tools. Tools you need,
mm-hmm.
yeah. But you can make it. Mm-hmm. It is just your labor and your skill and knowledge. And Mike is a good builder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's my ex-husband. That has a reason, but he's a good builder.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then what were some of the challenges?
Challenges is that, you know, certain things were labor intensive, for one thing. You know, having babies there, I had diapers, cloth diapers.
Okay.
Continuous washing is not a great fun.
Mm-hmm.
And my one desire was, I would like to have, clothing, like, something you can just wipe down and never have to wash all summer long. You know, especially with the kids. And because, hey man, that's a lot of work. Time, work, schlepping the water, everything. Doing diapers every day is a boiling situation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just lots of good part of your day is exactly that. And if you add the dishes and the cooking and the thing, it's kind of a lot of just tedious work, repetitive work.
So you were raising two daughters out on Chalk Creek.
Yes.
And you were also, before that, you were pregnant with two
babies. Yes.
At separate times. And
Sonia is born in this old house over there.
Okay.
And Iris is born in Trout Creek.
Okay.
At Christmas Eve.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're mentioning just the challenges of hauling water, and you were getting water off of the creek
Yeah.
or okay.
No, off the creek, yeah.
And boiling it and then just trying to make do with daily life's chores.
It's just a lot of chores. And I think that's what it used to be too. You know, we say the good old times, but actually it was a lot of chores. And if you were rich, you had servants doing the chores. And if you're not rich, you do it yourself.
Yes.
Okay?
So you're doing certain types of chores like cooking, cleaning, washing,
I
and
do.
out there,
Out
out there,
there.
the
Cooking,
trucks.
cleaning, washing. I also do chopping the wood. And all kinds of things, you know. And I continuously, since Mike was gone a lot,
Where was he?
well, he would go and trap line for one thing,
Okay.
gone for weeks on end, sometimes months. Then he would go sometimes, would be the one usually who goes to town.
Okay.
Somebody has to feed the dogs. Sometimes we would go all, that is true, but it's a big operation because you either have to run the dogs up to town because we had just the Grumman at that time, and then later we had a wooden freight canoe, wooden canvas, but still you take a lot of stuff and the dogs would have to run on the shore, so it's an undertaking. So you don't do it often. It's not that he says, oh, you can't go to town. It's just logistically, it's quite an undertaking, you know?
Okay.
And very few people can find somebody who goes and babysits a place down there for 2 weeks or something, you know.
So you would stay back with the two kids.
Quite often, because it was just not worth the trouble, you know. I mean, endless trouble. Or sometimes I would go, you know, and then Mike has to stay. I mean, you can't, for both of us to go, we would do that, but not on a regular base. You know, you do it once or twice. Maybe during the summer, easier in winter because you can hook up all the dogs, you know, and then you go. But it's just a logistical undertaking. You have animals.
And how many dogs did you have?
Well, we had, it depends at what point. We started out with one and then two, and then we had five, and then we had eight. I don't know whether I had much more than eight because you have to feed them, you know. And at that time, we didn't buy dog food. We didn't have the money to buy dog food. It's fishing. Sometimes, if there was a bad fish year, you had to get. We always had some oats or rice, dog rice, meaning the broken rice, the cheap one. And you would have, at that time, you could buy a bucket of tallow. Nowadays, it's hard to get these days, and they have all those fancy oils, and they're super expensive. But anyway, and so you would cook for the dogs, meaning either the fresh fish needs to be cooked anyway, because they can't handle it with the stuff on the skin, or later on you have the frozen or dried fish and you chop it up and you make a soup, not a soup, food, yeah. And you get the liquid in them and whatnot, yeah. So, yeah. But what were we talking about?
So part of the overall arching question was just chores that had to
Chores,
be
yes.
done, and then
Well,
how often you went into town, which
yes.
sounded like was once or twice a year.
No, I would get to Eagle more often because I could
Okay.
just, you know, it would be like one overnight and you come back. You can do
Okay.
that. You feed the dogs and they will be fine if
Okay.
you have the water dishes secured. It's just like going to Fairbanks or
Okay.
when we visited going to Germany.
Oh,
Yeah.
I see.
That would be undertaking,
So
yeah.
you were coming from Trout Creek, you
Yeah.
didn't have a place here in Eagle.
Well, we got to know the first year we came up through the people we knew, kind of this way and that way. We got to meet Benishes in Fairbanks. Walt Benish was a philosophy professor at the university. I
Okay.
don't know whether you ever met him. He's
What was his name?
Walt.
Walt.
Benish?
Benish. No.
No,
I
what
don't
a
know him.
pity.
Okay. So you knew someone in Fairbanks?
Yeah,
Okay.
yeah. And they were, they still were still very good friends. He died a few years ago.
Okay.
I admired him very much. Excellent person. And just recently, another Neil Brown died. You know
Yes.
that.
Poker Flats, yes.
those people, they're all the old guard, or used to be the old guard.
I guess part of me is trying to, so once or twice a year during the summer, you would come back to Eagle or someone?
I would, several times, okay. You know, and in the beginning, I wouldn't come that often because, you know, I'm not good with motors, they better run. And we had just it was some kind of Japanese little thing. It was not strong enough. You had to really run on the edge of the river to come up river.
A motor?
Motor, yeah. Okay. And then we changed it. I think it was just a 5-horse, okay. Something or another, which is, I mean, you sit there and you can count the flowers as you go by on the thing.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like, okay, we make progress, we're not losing ground here. Okay. Yeah, so it was a long trip. And then naturally we got used to run 25 horsepower Johnsons.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm not big, you're not big, I'm not big.
No.
You had to start them, and when I was successful, usually I would fly.
Oh.
I'm not so great. I didn't like it. I don't like motors. They don't like me. They know it. They break down on me. They do things, you know.
Okay.
But once we had a big wooden chestnut freighter, that was a beautiful boat. We got this from Jim and Elva Scott. They sold it.
Okay.
We made friends with them. You know about Jim and Elva Scott?
No.
Well, Jim and Elva Scott was responsible for making the museums come about.
Oh, okay.
The little Pavilion Bakuda in the park there, it's for her honor.
Okay.
Yeah, they were very important people for Eagle.
Did she start the Historical Society?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And they had that freighter and they sold it to us, they got a new one. Excellent boat, super steady. And once we had that, I felt really good in running it with the kids. I made a little covered thing up front where they would be, and you could freight a lot.
Okay.
You could push it with a 25. If there was bad waves, cross waves, standing waves, that boat could take it. I ran that boat where the motor would grab air, the waves are so bad. And
wow.
As long as you keep it steady into the wind, ain't gonna budge.
Huh.
Super good boat. It got crushed once we were up here. That one year there was this regular break up here, but like 60-foot walls down at Trout Creek.
Oh.
And it got crushed. It was pulled up high, but not high enough.
Okay.
And that was the end of that boat, and I was sorry. Sometimes there's a thing. We had another chestnut freighter after that, but there's just something about the form and shape and design,
mm-hmm.
which is right.
Okay.
And that thing was right.
Hmm.
Whoever made it, I think it was made in Canada. The second one was from Tetlin, I know that, mm-hmm. that freighter. But that one, wherever Mike Sager is better at that. He knows all those things. I don't.
Okay.
I know, but it's not in there. But I love a thing when it's designed really good and it works.
Hmm.
And that was the case with that boat.
Okay.
It was perfect.
So,
oh, well. Anyway, so I did go to town quite often, if necessary. But just...
Meaning here?
No, from Trout Creek to Eagle,
okay.
Yeah. And I did go to town later when we got a car,
yeah.
To Fairbanks too. It's just, you had to arrange it. It's not something you do nilly-willy, you
yes.
know. You can't.
Logistics, you have
yeah.
to think about logistics.
Yeah, planning.
So let's talk a little bit about life out at Trout Creek. You know, you said you initially started off with one dog and
yeah.
moved up in number.
Yeah.
So that means you guys were fishing in the summertime.
Yeah, in the summertime.
Were putting out nets for...
We fished with a... First we fished with nets. There wasn't great eddies. We fished at Montauk Bluff for kings.
Okay.
And at that time, I think, I have pictures. It was catching good fish, but it also catched all the drift in the world.
Oh.
So you had a problem there.
Okay.
those two things competing and checking the net was a pain in the butt. But I know I have one picture where I hold up a salmon. You know, there's none, now we can't fish.
Yeah.
At that time, quite often, I would pull out a salmon and I have to hold it up like this on the gills that it clears the ground.
Wow.
You know, with two hands, I have to hold it up like this. These fish are not there anymore.
Yeah.
It's a very sad thing to me. It's amazing. Yeah.
How things have changed. Yeah. So you're fishing for kings, but that's not for the dogs. That's
the kings, and then we also fished for dogs. In the beginning, we fished up at Wood Island.
Okay.
Across from Wood Island, there's a eddy. And we fished that for several years, but it was a pain in the butt because we had to freight them then down, throw them, you know, to Trout Creek. And it's very, you had to hang them, then you had to take them off, take them down, hang them up again. Lots of extra work.
Processing.
And then later on, Mike made a fish wheel, and we fished the wheel across from Trout Creek. We call it the Salmon's Island. It's the islands on the other side. There is a good current, and we fished the wheel there. But there was years that wouldn't do it either, and we would fish with nets on the eddy across that. There was one fall, late fall, where there is ice on the shore, where we still had to fish, and Mike went up as far as Calico to get fish, because we didn't get the fish. There was no fish.
Okay. So the fish wheel was for chums also?
No, we only for chums. We never downriver. We never fished for kings with the wheel, and even here we don't. We don't have. Yeah, I need a good eddy. We don't have a good eddy for. I mean, we do have it now further down, but kings you can do that if it's further away because you know, it's a short season. You only need that many fish. Mm-hmm. We never take too many kings. We never did. It's just people food only. And we have a certain thing we preserve. I think it's like 30-some fish we take or something like that.
Okay.
And that is with giving some away.
Okay.
So because I don't hold for that, never did. Mm-hmm. But then for the chums, you need something close by because you do it every day for a long time till you have your thousands of fish, whatever you need, you know. So you can't go. It would be very expensive for gas and labor to go very far, you know. So up here, we fished across the river on the island side, you know. There's the, but not lately, not last year, and not this year. It's done. That's why you see everywhere fish wheels, fish racks are used for other things. That if you watch, we have two or three right here.
Yeah.
There's one at the garden. There's at the airport is one at close to the boat line. They're just standing around, you know, if you know what it is here and there.
They're empty. How about berry picking in the summertime?
Oh, yeah.
You guys out at Trout Creek?
At Trout Creek, you know, the environment is different.
Mm-hmm.
You start with the cloud berries, the orange ones or whatever you call them. Then you get, there's no wild strawberries, but there's raspberries, there's some wild currants, black and red.
Wow.
Yeah, you have to know where they live. Lots of raspberries because it's an old burn. Yeah, so you have to crawl around in it, but a lot of raspberries. Trout Creek itself does not have many blueberries, but in the boggy, swampy areas like across from Montauk, there would be a lot. In the valley itself, not a whole bunch, you know.
Okay.
So blueberries wasn't our main staple. High bush cranberries, rose hips.
You're picking for the winter, like you're storing berries.
Yeah, make jam or you can them, or you cranberries in the later part, you would just put them in a cloth bag and hang them up if it's, you know, they keep quite well. Cranberries was a big staple of us, for us.
Probably high bush.
No, low bush.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My favorite berries. You can't beat them. They're not squishy. They're most beautiful colored.
Mm-hmm.
You pick them when it's already fallish, so it's not hot. I mean, there's the little stuff, flies around, the black flies, whatever. There's always something around. But they are very beautiful. I love cranberries. And here we go up for the blueberries, hopefully pretty soon up high. Okay. Because there's some here out the road even, you know, mm-hmm. but not in the amounts. What we do, we go, everybody, and we pick a day and we have several gallons, four gallons, you know. So it's more efficient and it's fun up there when it's warm.
Okay.
In the high country. It's not fun if it's not warm. And I don't like it if too many hunters crawl around, because the caribou season will be open, I think, about 10th or 12th. I want those blueberries to happen before that.
Yeah.
I don't feel well with all kinds of people crawling around, being all trigger happy to shoot something. Yeah.
So. How about fall time hunting, speaking of which?
I am not a hunter.
But out at Trout Creek, you guys were looking for meat.
Absolutely.
Okay.
At Trout Creek, moose, and then the caribou are there in the winter, but they're there in small bands, so they're spooky.
Okay.
We had one time where this huge caribou crossing happened between basically the nation and eagle. Huge, they would come across back and forth, you know, milling across here, coming through. And we got some then. That's when we got the only one time, maybe one other time. So caribou we wouldn't get on a regular base because they wouldn't be there.
Okay.
It was moose in the fall. Trout Creek has a game trail come down. So we, on a regular base, would get one or two bears every year, pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah, because they come and visit us.
And how would you process the moose and the bears?
Well, we would can the meat if it's too early.
Okay.
Yeah. Preferably, you get it as late as you can, because if you're lucky, you have temperatures where you can hang it. And that happened quite often, yeah. Some parts you still would can, but you could hang the hindquarters. I mean, you have to take care of the ribs and stuff, you know, but the big pieces of meat you could hang. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the weather wasn't so great for that, because it would be rainy and wet. Yeah, that wouldn't be so great. But we canned a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, we didn't really dry much, because we didn't have to set up either fish or warm meat, but canning, yeah. And I kind of still miss it. It was handy to have a can of meat, you know, really cool, yeah. But now I don't, obviously. It goes in the freezer, you know, but...
So it tastes different, right? You know?
It does taste different. Yeah. And usually, as I said, it was a mixture of it, because the big pieces you could hang, it would be good enough. They can age a little bit, and then bring them in wintertime, a leg at a time, and cut it up, and go from there. And some parts I always would can.
Did you have a cache?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very necessary.
We had high caches and we had barrel caches.
Okay.
Because, as I said, we're on a game trail. Mm-hmm. The bears would come, and we also... when we were there, we never had a trouble, you see. They would come in, but since we were gone, only Germany we would do in winter time usually, visiting.
Okay.
So that's, the bears are out. And otherwise, we never were gone very long, and we made a point of not letting things kick around. We had some really secure drum caches too, bears couldn't get in.
Okay.
So we were there a lot, let's say it like this. There's bears coming in. I even had to shoot one day, even me.
Tell me about that, the story.
Well, you know, they come in, they check you out, you know, they're around. I had one dog, a female, my female, and she would not bark for nothing.
Okay.
But if she stood up and made that barky growl, there was a bear there.
Okay.
That's the only time she would ever sound off. Not for strangers, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I have, the way the Trout Creek set up was, I have the big windows looking at the dog yard always. I want to see the dogs. Okay. So when I do dishes, I'm doing dishes. The kids are outside playing. We hear a motor come because you hear it on the river. We think it's a neighbor coming up, pulling to the slough probably, and stop. The kids get excited. They go out the trail. The dogs are barking because of the motor, looking down to the slough. And I watch all this when I see Minu, my big female. She was like a Malamute, 120-pound Malamute female.
Wow.
She's lazy too, you know. She stands up, hackles up, and makes this growly bark. And I knew, looking the other way, past me, past the cabin, the kids are this way. The dogs, all the other dogs look that way to the river. Minu looks this way, and I said, shit. Because there was a bear hanging around. I saw signs of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're curious. The black bears are curious. They're smart and curious, and they check things out, you know. Mm-hmm. So I knew there was a bear around. And that's in the middle of the day, like early afternoon, you know. And so I went out, and my gun is right out the door. So I go out the door and reach for the gun. And there's the bear. It's like 4 feet away at the corner of the cabin. It got startled by me. It didn't expect me. And I have a spruce tree, another 4 feet away from the corner there. And it went up the tree a little ways. So I just ignored the bear, kept on walking. Called the kids and says, you have to come with me now. And they knew me, that they had to follow me when I'm dead serious. Mm-hmm. You know, and their eyes are like that big as if we walk in. And they say, there's a bear out there. Go upstairs. And there's different account from the kids when you ask Sonia and Iris. Iris was little, Sonia was bigger because what happened, you know. Mm-hmm. But my account is, once the kids were in, I stepped outside. I knew I'm not a great shot. I don't have great hand-eye coordination. But that one is close. It's right there. Okay. It's like, what, 10 feet away?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 12 up the tree? Some 6 or 8 or 10 feet. You know, I mean, it's right there.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a big gun, a Marlin, what is it called, 44 or 444. It's a brush gun. It has a blunt bullet.
Mm.
It is not for distance, but it's very powerful.
Oh.
So I take it and I say, and it's a lever action. I have to hit the bear, and then I have to hit the bear again. Because it has to be dead then by the time, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a perfect bear, poor thing. And I had to take him because he was coming in for days. At that point, you have to take him. He will not stop coming in, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And here he is in the middle of the day. He had a diamond on his chest.
That's what you aim for. Oh.
And I had like a boxy thing around on the cabin. So I'm going down, I'm leveling, I'm holding it, and I'm going to do it. And I hit him, and he came down, and I hit him again before he hit the ground.
Hmm.
And then I didn't do anything. I told the kids, they saw there's a window up there, they whatever. And then I let Mike's lead dog, Potts, loose. He's very smart, he knows about bears. And I figured he's gonna check out how dead this thing is. And he did. He's very cautious. He would go and I watched him, and then finally he sniffed him and I knew he's dead, because otherwise I have to shoot him again. You know, they're not always dead. Yeah. So that's my bear.
Hmm.
And I'm sorry, I don't like shooting things at all.
Yeah.
I do not like shooting things. So.
You processed him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But then on the other hand, I rather have everything clean so they don't have a reason you cause that they come in extra, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But once they hang around and check you out, you have to try to get them, or if you catch it on early enough, you could scare them off, and sometimes that works, not always. But that one, I felt strongly I had to get with us. Mike wasn't there, obviously. Mm. Yeah, so whatever. But there's, you know, bears are part of this, and everybody has many bear stories. Mm-hmm. Because you have encounters, and quite often it just works out that way. And since we talk about it, quite often it's lucky. Mm-hmm. Yeah, quite often it's just circumstances, or maybe you were smart about it, you know, and made the necessary things that nothing happened. It's just a combination of things. Mm-hmm. They are here, and they have their own limitations, mm-hmm. and we have our limitations. And between the two of that, sometimes it doesn't work out. Quite often, more often than not, it works out. So, yeah, you know, it's like crossing the street. You can do what you can. You watch the traffic, you do your best, and then you cross. Mm-hmm. You know? So I'm glad there's bears around, because it means we still have bears around. Yeah. You know, I'm glad there's moose around. I have a great respect of moose. I don't mess with them. I see a moose, I go away. I make sure there's a tree between me and the moose. Yeah. They're not happy creatures.
So that respect came from living out on Trout Creek?
And yeah, learning about moose.
Observing.
They're not happy.
Yeah.
They're pressured. If you have a dog, they don't like you at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, you watch out with a team. They have reason. Mm. You know, could be a wolf in a harness. I mean, what does it matter? Whatever. And they don't like you. They know you're not supposed to be there. Especially the cows. Quite often they have a calf. They can have a two-year-old calf with them. You don't necessarily see them. They're ornery. They don't take chances. They're huffy and angry, usually. I think that's their disposition. They're mostly angry. Yeah. I've come from town where, and I watch my side, where I see a moose come charging out of the bushes. I stop the car on the highway between Delta and Tok. I stop the car. I'm stopping here. There's not much traffic. It's okay. Kind of late at night, maybe 11-ish. Okay? And this big thing comes out here, running onto the road, all hackled up. So something is bothering it. Otherwise, it wouldn't have done that. And here I am in that pickup. Where's my pickup? This pickup. Okay? So I'm not little. And this thing stops in the road, looks at me, and comes running towards the standing car. Now it's angry at me. I mean, the car. I mean, what is a car to a moose, for crying out loud? Except that it has a, it's really, really angry. Mm-hmm. And it's coming, and I say, oh my God, it's gonna charge into the car, damage itself, then I have this huge thing in front of my truck, and what do I do then? You know, I have to turn around, I have no phone, I have to make somebody know that this is, I can't, I have to flag it out. I mean, I don't have a gun. I can't even kill it if it's injured. I have to hope somebody comes by, you know. Mm-hmm. And this thing, just at the last second, it turns a 90 in front of me, slips and falls. And it's like, okay, you break your leg, I just might just kill you, okay? Uh-huh. And luckily it got up and went across the road. I mean, for nothing. It was angry, not at me. But then it sees something, and it will be angry at that, you know, stressed. They can get very angry. And as seconds you've said, sometimes you need a shovel, you know, to tell them, not with you, I don't know. So I have a great respect of moose, because I also have a great respect of cows.
Because cow moose.
I ran off cows before. In the mountains, I like hiking, and I ran off stampeding cows as fast as I could down the slope, across the electric, vaulting across the electric wire, and saying, oh my God, oh my God. I don't, those hoofed things are way more powerful than one thinks, you know. Cows, lazy, eating grass, chewing. The next thing you know, you have the whole world shaking, and this thunder, cloud of speeding thunder demons are coming after you. Oh man, no. I'm whatever.
So say you guys got your fall moose.
Yeah.
And were you set for the winter, or were you guys?
Well, if you get
hunting?
The moose, you're okay.
Yeah.
If you got the fish, you're okay. Yeah. We had winters where we eat canned fish and fish patties and rice, mostly with beans. Mm-hmm. And everybody kind of isn't so thrilled by the time spring comes around with that diet, you know? Because we didn't get a moose. So you get the moose when you have it. You don't have it before.
Were you, if you didn't get the moose in the fall, were you out searching for anything in the winter?
We would have rabbit snares.
Okay.
We have the you know, the spruce, the grouse, and the ptarmigan, and the fish. Okay. We would put up a lot of fish. Fish was our staple. We had our staple foods, the grains, the fish, and the beans and peas and that kind of stuff. It was our staple. And we had this where we did not get a moose. No.
So you mentioned Mike was out trapping in the winter.
Yeah.
Sometimes he'd be gone months at a time or a month at a time or more.
Yeah, maybe 3-4 weeks, a month at a time. If he was out up north, he would be gone longer, yeah, several months, yeah.
Okay. What was he mainly trapping for?
Mostly marten.
Okay.
And then depending, you know, some lynx.
Okay.
Ever so often some wolverine, because they come and say, oh, there's a trap line. I go live here, and I eat those things. And we never really trapped for wolves very much.
Okay.
Mike, I think the whole time, he got maybe 3 wolves, and those ones he shot in fall. And Sonia has a wolf parker. I didn't really like it. And he stopped doing that in the later parts totally. We had a wolf family living there. Part of them were black. We saw them all the time. They would even come in and check on us, like right across from the cabin. They would stay on the other side of the creek, go a little bit on our bridge, which was actually just a log across, mm-hmm. and then check us out and vanish. We would see tracks of them all the time. Sometimes if we had a little net just on the Trout Creek side, on that little bluff for, you know, little regular fishes in the river in springtime, we would catch the suckers and the whitefish and that stuff. Mm-hmm. They might take something. They never mm-hmm. troubled us.
Okay.
And I never had a problem with the wolves at all. On the other side, they had more problems, like Dawn and Dave Evans, they would have more trouble with the wolves over there.
Okay.
We never had trouble with the wolves.
Oh, so
and I've seen them in winter time. One time I was walking the puppies down to the slough. It's winter, the slough is all frozen. And I see those 3 wolves come bounding through in the middle of the slough. They saw us. And I immediately retreated up to bank. And they kept bounding, and they looked really happy till they were close enough, and the first one realized I'm a person.
Oh.
And he literally bound and twisted in the air when he realized I was not another wolf-friendly something, another or something,
mm-hmm.
and made like a 90 in the air and then split into the islands, and they all went. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, he was just happy. I like wolves.
Mm-hmm.
They can creep you out, because at times they creeped out when we had just 2 dogs. I remember that one fall, they were staking us out. And at night, I swear, beautiful sounding, but it gets up your hackles when they're all staked out around you and they start making their special wolf song, and the dogs want to come in, and you let them in because they don't feel good about this. Yeah, there is something kind of creepy about it. And you think twice even in the day. You say, if they were here watching me last night, they're probably here right now, okay? And there have been cases where dogs have been attacked or a wolf sit in the dog yard. And you suddenly realize you have one dog too many and it's not chained up. Yeah, and stuff like that. On the other side, Don would have probably told you that when his dogs got attacked. He was walking up the Candic on the checking his line or going somewhere,
mm-hmm.
and one of his females was lagging behind, and she almost got killed by them.
Huh.
Yeah, because they were trailing them. Yeah. So it depends. And it depends how hungry they are. Because the wolves go with the caribou, and then sometimes they kind of miss the connection. And then the caribou, they get into little bands and they get really spooky, you know, 4 or 5 in a band or something. So they're harder to catch. Yeah. And like Dave Evans across the river at Nation, he had one come in his shed, and he had to shoot it. When he shot it, it was skin and bones. It was starving, you know. So, yeah, sometimes they are very hungry. But on our side, the wolves, who they live there always. They wouldn't go migrating this way and that way. And we never had trouble with them. Even we watched the young ones on the shores. I enjoyed it. Part of them were pitch black and the other ones were gray ones.
Yeah. So, I mean, you had mentioned that Mike had shot a wolf in the fall. And,
yeah.
And Sonia has a parka. But in regards to the other furs, were you...
Yeah.
Using the fur.
Mike was mostly trapping marten, some lynx, and some wolverine.
Yeah.
He was trapping. I did most of the skinning and putting up the fur, you know, drying it and stuff. We did make some garments like the hats. Mike made Sonia's parka. He could also sew, you know. He had a bear parka. We did, it's hard to tan the bear. We tanned our own things, you know. So, but he did have a bear parka, and I don't know who has the bear parka now, whether it's Sonia or Mike, I don't know if it's still around. And yeah, so we did make things with some of the furs, meaning usually if you have a marten which is damaged, you would probably keep it, I would keep it. And use it for myself, for ourselves, you know, the good pieces, and not send it off to the auction, because you better send off prime first if you want to get a decent price. So you pull out the ones which are, you know, maybe chewed on or have a injury damage or something, you know. So yeah, we had certain furs, and we did sometimes send away the hide of the moose to a place, and they would turn it into leather, so we had that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh, so you were skin sewing.
Yeah, yeah, I like working with leather, I like working with fur, and I used to do quite a bit for our purpose. When I moved up to town, I sewed some hats, mostly fox, because Kazarik had a fox farm there, and people wanted some hats, and I needed money, anything. Yeah. But I don't like sewing for, you know, commercial, for money. I don't like it because it's more, I don't want, I'm not good at making lots of anything. I like doing this now, and then I want to do this now. So I'm not good at mass producing. I hate it, yeah. And then there's many other things I like to do even better than sewing. I know how to sew, and now my kids sew, Sonia and Iris and Alida, they all know how to sew a ruff, you know, wolverine ruff, make a nice one, and they sew Iris and Alida, they got it from Riva de Wild, they had her teach them, so they all do, yeah, which is good, it's a very good skill to have, you know. That you know what you do, it's nice, I think. No matter what, I know furs are not in, but here you have certain furs, you have a very good use. You have a good wolverine ruff on your parka. I have some ruffs which are probably 30 some years old, maybe 35, and they're still good, you know, because if you treat it well. So it's not a wasteful thing for us to have. Okay.
Spring hunting. You know, like you said, you were making fish patties, but come spring, what kind of new meat were you looking for?
Well, Mike is the hunter, so I have to talk to him. Well, the ducks and the geese, if you can find a way to get them.
Okay.
Yeah. Meaning either you have the water open and get them, or you have... the eyes good enough that you can get out there. It's not that easy. Beaver. Yeah, I'm not a beaver eater. Beavers are my friends. I can't eat them. But everybody likes beaver. So, at least in my family, they like it. I participate because it's necessary. But the beavers are my special friends, okay? Uh-huh. And then bear. We usually would get bear in spring. Okay. Yeah. And then the fresh fishes. You know, we have a little net, white fish net in there for the white fish or the suckers. The dogs get the suckers and the sheep fishes. And so, and yeah. Okay. That's till you wait for fall to get that moose again. Yes, and sometimes it would come really easy and sometimes it didn't want to come at all. You know, it just depends. A little luck needs to go in there besides your knowledge. Yeah. It has to, always a little luck come.
What did you like about living out there? I mean, what did it mean to you?
Well, living out there, you have to try it out if it fits you. Mm-hmm. Because this, your male has nothing to do how much you like nature or whatever. It has mostly to do is, do you like the solidarity? Do you like that nobody else is around? Mm-hmm. You know, can you talk to the trees? You know, is it okay for you if you talk to the trees? Yeah. And so you have to see whether you can stand the loneliness or if it's something you like or if it's something you suffer with. Yeah. Mm. And I think that's the main thing. And then you must be willing to pick up on the necessary skills, yeah, mm-hmm. to be safely out there. No? Mm-hmm. And I think some people take to it and some people have a hard time that they need to actually go somewhere else where they have more half and half of it because they can't be without the social part. It's not good for them. No. And I think you only know really when you try it out. Mm-hmm. Now, I happen to be very good on my own. Yeah. I have no problem talking to trees or rocks or anything. So I like it. I like that part, and I can, and I thought when Sonia was born, my God, there's just me. Will the child even learn how to talk, you know? No problem. Yeah. Apparently, I also can talk to myself. and so it really depends. And obviously, I have a pretty vivid imagination. I like books, but I also like making up my own stories. And so I think a good deal has to do, is it hardship for you or is it something you enjoy and take pleasure in it?
There were no other families nearby.
Well, there was a nation, but it's not that you would constantly visit or anything like that, you know. And kids were far and in between. No. There was later on some kids down at the Candic for a little while, a couple, you know, here and there was kids, but not anything you go there and play or anything like this, really. Yeah. So, yeah. And I think it's okay for little kids to be down there, but when they get older, I think you have to really work hard to compensate or make socialization available for them. Because it's part of their development. It's really hard if they're too isolated. I don't think so that it's that good. There must be, whichever way you arrange it, if they go visit, live with grandma or auntie for a while in the summer, or so, you know, you must give them a way to experience the other part too when they get older, meaning when they get preschool age, they have to start getting exposed to other things. For example, Sonia grew up speaking German. And when she was about almost three, around that time, and we were in town, we were visiting, you know, picking things up or whatever here in Eagle. And at one point she told me in German that she's stupid because she cannot talk properly. And I said, what do you mean? She couldn't talk English. And he says, you're not stupid. I tell you how to talk properly. And I realized what I'm doing. I totally spaced out that, no, obviously she wants to talk to everybody else. Obviously, just because you are in America doesn't mean that she speaks the language if she never hears it. Mm-hmm. You know? So, and it went very fast. Within a couple of months, she could do it. Yeah, but you have to watch out for those things that you inadvertently make a mistake on that scale, which is not good for the kid. And the same is with the isolation. We are social creatures, you know, and this is your pick, and you have to give them the chance to see the other thing and experiences too, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sure, lots of kids grow up out there, and I say you can compensate. Just give. Are you hungry or what? You see, that's what she does. If she wouldn't bring those mice, I would have no garden. And I love mice.
Yeah.
I mean, this one is alive. Okay. Don't look that way. Okay.
So how long did you live out there?
We got there in 76. God, when did I get divorced? I should know that, shouldn't I? 87?
Okay.
88? I don't know.
So about a dozen years or so.
Okay. Somewhere around there.
Okay.
Yeah, something like this. Because Mike built this cabin, by the way, the front part, you know.
Okay.
And we moved in here. We were a winter in the old house, part of a winter in the old house. And then that got finished and we moved in here.
Okay. Oh, so you both moved into town together?
Yeah.
And your daughters were?
Well, at first they were with me. We have joint custody and then, you know, that's
okay.
Whatever.
But
yeah,
we figured I imagine that out. There must have been some acclimation to come back and live out here.
Well, at that time, all the kids, they knew the neighbor kids, you know, Nelsons at that time, our neighbors. We were spending, regular come to town. As I say, you make a point to socialize the kids, you know, you mm-hmm. do have to. So they knew the house. We stayed there numerous times, the old house, mm-hmm. where we spent part of the winter in there. So at that time, when we got divorced, they already had their friends here in town. I mean, they missed Trout Creek because, you know, that was their home. But we did move, and we didn't move to an unknown place.
Yes.
This was a known place to them. Mm-hmm. You know? And a known neighborhood, a good neighborhood. They knew there was kids over there and kids over there. And even to this day, the girl, Emily, who is as old as Sonia, I call her my near daughter because she's always been the very best friend the girls could have. Even so, they moved to Fairbanks a long time ago, you know. So, they made the move okay.
Mm-hmm. So, once you came back into town, some of the same activities were still happening, right? You know, still going out hunting, still fishing
yeah.
the river.
Yeah.
Still kind of maintaining the same
yeah.
lifestyle.
Yeah.
You
just pick the berries in different places. You put the net in a different spot if you had one. And, And I did, in the beginning, I had more dogs. And I did fish for chums. For a couple of years, and then I said, forget it, because I was getting less dogs, and I didn't need to, and I haven't fished for chums since then. Mm-hmm. I was together with Hannah, my youngest daughter's father, Andy Bassett here, and he fished for chums. There's this fish wreck still there, that depleted thingy there, but I never did. So after that, because I had no need to, situation changed, and I didn't have the means I would need to rely on. You know, my kids were younger then. Now they have their own fish wheel and stuff, but at that point they wouldn't, and I would have to rely on others to use their stuff because I didn't have all the tools and the means. I'm not a builder, you know. No, I'm makeshifting, as you can see on the stairs. Do you see how they're propped up? With pieces of wood, the lower step. That's how I fix things. Till somebody else who really fixes things fixes it. I come out of a family of builders, but I could do it maybe, but it's like hand-eye coordination, like hunting. I measure things, and then it's not the right measurement anyway. It's just not my thing. No. So I know when it's well done. So, but yeah, we did pretty much similar activities. Just in different places.
Okay.
So.
When you say in different places, were you folks necessarily going back into the preserve, into Yukon Charlie?
Even now, quite often you go hunting them.
Okay.
Because first of all, there's a good chance the moose are down there. Mm-hmm. Down there, there's a longer season for the moose, for the locals. Mm-hmm. It's better too when all the others, whatever. And you know the layout, you know what places to check. You know, some people have their, like with everything, they have their favorite places they go hunt. Some people go up a side creek, others do this or that, you know, the typical thing. And it just depends. Mostly, ideally, when you say, I go hunting, when we say that, ideally, you would mean you go down the river. If you go out the road, you specify that. If you go somewhere else, but if you say, I'm going to go moose hunting, you kind of, in your mind, at least in mine, you would think, yeah, I go down river or on the river or something. But naturally, you can hunt them in many places, mm-hmm. obviously. Mm-hmm. Hey, go not to me. I knew it.
Yeah.
Oh. Don't like you.
Okay. I think it was a spruce bark.
I know.
Yeah.
That's why I don't like them.
Yeah.
And I don't like killing things, so I usually just fling them.
He came out of nowhere.
Yeah, because it's determined. They are determined in their weird little ways.
So in your experience, have you seen, you know, you were living down at Trout Creek, and then all of a sudden 1980 came, and the preserve was created. Yeah.
That was another reason.
And so maybe speak a little bit to that.
Well, the reason, that was also another reason, because now it's a preserve, and it was really weird because they came and talked to us, and we had to sign over our cabin to them. And I said, this is illogical. Mm-hmm. You tell us we're here illegally, but you tell us we have to sign the cabin over to you, but I think it's something, you know, lawyer legally thing, maybe because we made it. I don't know. In my mind, is if you build something in a place you're not supposed to, you really cannot sign over anything. You're not supposed to be there in the first place. Mm. But so I'm not sure. But the point is, originally we had to sign something that we sign over the cabin to the Park Service, and there must be something to it because since then we hold a permit for the cabin. The girls renew it. Mm-hmm. We are all on it. Mm-hmm. Nobody, it's not a public use cabin. Mm-hmm. So here runs the mouse. She escaped. That's the, Willie is looking for it in the garden, and the mouse went under the house. Thank you, Willie. Oh. Yeah. Anyway, so that gets Sonia and the girls stay on top of that. We mm-hmm. still hold the permit. But at that time was the time where you could not permanently live down there anymore. That's why everybody had to go up to town. Mm-hmm. We did, no, both Mike and I. It just happened to fall together with our divorce plans too. It's mm-hmm. just coincidence. Okay. But divorce or not, we would have had to move because we could live there part-time, like when we are trapping. Or we could be there when we are fishing, but we could not be a permanent resident. Hmm. So we needed something in town. It just happened that way. And I don't mind the park. Some people do. I don't. Mm-hmm. Because every scrap which can be kept a little bit together from being screwed up, I'm grateful for. And if it's the Park Service doing it, so be it. I have no problem with that. I just think overall, I don't know, I just thought about it today. The thing is, people want to utilize everything. It's like, this point is, if we don't start thinking differently, you know, Iris was the one, I think, had a poster on her door when she lived here in this house with us, and it was a speech of some of famous Indian native chief. And he said, basically, if the fishes are gone and the animals are gone, the people have to go too. This planet is fine, whether we are here or not, whether we can live here. It's just part of the universe. It doesn't really matter. But it matters to us. If we want to be here, then we have to do something to stay, be able to stay here. And it doesn't mean that we have to look at everything as a profit. It cannot be measured on that. You cannot say, oh, there is no salmon, king salmon coming up the Yukon, when you don't do everything to take any stress away from the king salmon. Yeah? But they have, Alaska has the false pass trolling fleet. Makes a lot of money. All the other fishing things and whatever, hatcheries, everybody makes a lot of money. So it can't be touched. But you won't make a penny if you don't do anything about it. And neither will there eventually be people around who can make a penny. You know, ain't gonna, you can't eat pennies. Yeah? It is terrible. That short-sightedness is sad because, quite frankly, I don't give a shit if 1,000 years from now there's no people here. Then there is no people here. So what? There's no people on Mars? Are we very sad about that? No, it's exciting. Oh, there's something, maybe there was some. Maybe we are Martians. Who gives a shit? I don't. But the point is, I'm tired of they all saying, oh, we have to do something, we have to do something. And then it always stops at the buck. No. Oh, it's too expensive. Oh, we lose too much money. Oh, too many jobs get lost. Well, there will be other jobs. Come on, work on getting things done good. But everybody is just this short-sighted little thing in everything. And that way, whatever, I have no hope for mankind on the planet. You know, and there's this famous saying that, did a tree fall if nobody is there to hear it? Yeah, the tree falls. And nobody cares a darn whether anybody hears it, okay? It's just this overemphasis on humans. So what, you know? No, we're not that important. But we have a chance to be smart about it, and we're not. Not that I can see it. So there's no salmon.
Yeah, so I guess that's my question is, you know, how have things changed in terms of fish and wildlife resources that you've seen?
Amazing. Utterly amazing. When I came here, obviously I come from Germany, this is this country which is still wild, the way it's wild and woolly, the way it's supposed to be doing its own thing. I know, it didn't take very long before the trouble started, because I remember when we came here, it was just beginning that they were giving out all those extra commercial fishing licenses. There used to be very few commercial fishing licenses, and if you research it, at some point, lots more were given out. And then suddenly, you could fish not just for your own thing, you could sell it. And then it came this gray area of subsistence through selling it, which enables you to live and get other things. And everything went down the hill. Then the other commercial developments, the trolling, the factory trolling. Factory trolling, I think, ruined many things in many places. We are not the only one. And why they're not ever outlawed these nasty things, I don't know. I do know, because it's money. Because the damage is just too much. I have nothing against fishermen. And I wish they would find a way that fishermen can make a living, you know, the regular fishermen with their boats in the villages or wherever they live, you know. But this is not the case. They are, it's not the case and whatever. So I'm sad that even Alaska, where many people don't even know where the heck it is because they think it's somewhere below Hawaii, the way it's on the map, if they even know where it is, okay? Mm-hmm. That even Alaska, you see it coming. We're talking about those fishes forever that do things, that do nasty things, where they manage the wildlife, where they have wolf control, where they try to eradicate the wolf packs. Mm-hmm. You're messing with something. You think you get more caribou? Maybe you get more sick caribou. Maybe you get too many caribou. Leave it alone. But I have the feeling nowadays if people can drive out the road and have the caribou right there, they are unhappy. Oh, they have to be also there at a certain time, okay? Mm-hmm. Meaning during hunting season, make sure they're there. And in my mind, it's go make a pasture. Grow caribou. They will be there at the time you want them. Shoot them if that's what you want. Yeah, I am frustrated how fishing game is quite a, unquote, managed for human consumption, for human use. Mm-hmm. That's not how it should be managed. Fish and game should be managed for the fish and the game, and the humans can take something if there is an abundance and it's done correctly. Yeah, that's my big problem. Because every time we mess majorly with one thing, 10 years later we see something is wrong on the other side. Mm-hmm. Oh, we didn't know. No, you knew if you wanted to look at it and use your head. You knew there would be a consequence. Okay? Little kids learn in school, it's all connected. How come you get your degrees and you come out and you suddenly don't remember that. Yeah? I have a problem with that. I have a problem with our fishing game board, majorly. It's totally top heavy on not for the fish and the game side, but for the people use side. Yeah, and it's ridiculous. And it's not going to help us out because I say once they're gone, they're gone. You know, it's hard to get the genie back into the box once you pull it out, you know. So I have very little patience with that. I know people love hunting. I know they say, oh, it's our right. And we also take meat, quite frankly. I buy chickens and I buy a bacon, but I don't buy beef or pork. I don't, you know, meat. Mm-hmm. Because I'm lucky and fortunate. Because we can hunt a moose. Mm-hmm. Yes, I know how that feels. Or we can hunt a caribou, yeah? Mm-hmm. And lots of people move to town and they still want that. And I can see that. Mm-hmm. But we have to, first of all, look at our resources and don't mess with them. Mm-hmm. Yeah? And it's going to be crazy out that way. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, when I look at the people who come up here hunting on the road, if you're around and you see it, some of those rigs are huge trucks. Some have freezer trucks up there. All those fancy off-road vehicles, all that stuff. If they have enough money to have these rigs, those freezer trucks, those off-road vehicles, yeah, mm-hmm. maybe they didn't need those 300-400 pounds of caribou. Mm. Not really, yeah. I'm totally think anybody who needs meat should have a chance to hunt for it, mm-hmm. if they can, yeah. Or somebody should hunt for them if they can't anymore, like old people. Mm-hmm. But I think that hunting culture is cultivated. And not necessarily has anything to do with need or doing it necessarily in a respectful manner. Mm-hmm. It's like the gun issue. Mm-hmm. I have to have a gun if I'm a man or a woman for that matter or something, you know, that right it's my right for this or my right for that. It all falls into that, in a way, and has little to do with actually the people who would use or need or... There's just too many people who do it for sport and fun. That's what I would say. Mm-hmm. I'm not a friend of sport hunters. I don't like it.
I guess my final question to you, Elizabeth, is just what are your hopes for your grandchildren's generation?
Well, it would surely would be nice if they still could fish a few salmon. And I say even moderation. As I say, we never take huge salmon. Some people have put it even up for dogs. I'm totally against that. And if the fish are low, we will stop. Like last year, we didn't even fish the last two openings because it was too low. The numbers were too sad. Yeah, especially since we know, since Mike McDougall works at the sauna, we know, okay? And you can't justify it, you know. So we got about half the fish we normally can and none in the freezer, really, last year. This year, we don't get any. As a matter of fact, there's the red salmon in Bristol Bay are tremendous, great numbers and everything, and I have four fillets from friends of ours who got some from a friend of theirs from down there. So we will have actually salmon, one meal, fresh frozen. But it's very sad. I wish that in the future my grandchildren and their children, that things would still be a little bit okay, you know. Not everything ruined. I mean, we have so many threats. We have those mining threats, these things which can cause, the oil threat, which can cause disasters, which are not fixable, yeah? Why even contemplate trying to do something that is not fixable if something happens? That to me is inconceivable, you know. I know Alaska has many riches. Yes. That is true, and the world and the commerce and the business wants it. But we have other riches which would get destroyed by it. Yeah, and I don't see how there is still fight. Our politicians go on the other side, they want to develop. I'm not against infrastructure. I wish we would have a better infrastructure for the people who live here, not for the outside companies who come to exploit our minerals and treasures. It is like you know, we used to be a colony where you suck out all the treasures. We don't produce hardly anything. We don't manufacture anything with our resources. The resources themselves go out basically raw. It's the fish, it's the oil, it's the minerals. We are not doing anything with it. If we would do something with it, we could make it on a small scale. We are not that many people. If we could develop our own infrastructure for the people who live here, that would be a good thing. Hey, look at anything you buy, the packaging we get up here. You don't have to reinvent it. It's already there. They know how to reuse it. Now we just need money from the government because it is expensive to set it up. Indeed, you have to dish something out in the beginning till it works for itself. But we're not doing that. No. And there's little chance for that because that means somebody, the state, puts out money for something which is way in the future. That ain't gonna happen. I mean, just the packaging. I was in town, I went to Costco, so I had cardboard like no tomorrow, you know. And okay, it's probably not much good cardboard because it's all shiny and glossy and poisonous colors on it, but one could not do that. Yeah. And then we would have good cardboard, we can do something with it. Whatever. There is ways we're not using it. Yeah. So that's sad. But I hope that the young people get more forceful. They have, sadly enough, you're not getting it with being good change. Yeah. You always have to be very forceful about, and I don't say violent, but persistent mm-hmm. and bugging and forceful, because otherwise nobody listens. Mm-hmm. Politely? No. Would you please do that? Mm-hmm. So what? That's my opinion. Mm-hmm. But I love this country, mm-hmm. and I like that it's still wild and woolly compared to other places. Mm-hmm. It's a good country.
Well, thank you, Elizabeth.
You're welcome. And you know, you can edit that thing. I'm just talking. And yeah, you can do with it what you want, but it's just my rambling talk. Since I'm an old lady, I can be excused if I make some not politically correct statements. So I'm already sorry if I did offend anybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
You're welcome.